By the terms of the Treaty of Hathor, a Pepi's seat would remain at Avaris and Nefertiti's at Thebes. Each would govern his former kingdom, but in the name of the Biumvirate. Twice every year, at the beginning and the end of the inundation of the Nile, the two kings would hold a combined royal assize at Memphis, where all matters concerning the two kingdoms would be dealt with, new laws enacted, and legal appeals considered. However, before the two pharaohs parted, each to take up his seat in his respective capital, Apepe and his train would sail upriver in company with Nefertiti's fleet to Thebes. There they would attend Lord Naja's double wedding. The simultaneous embarkation of both trains from the wharf below the temple was a chaotic affair that took up most of the morning. Taita mingled with the throng of boatmen and dockers, slaves and important passengers. Even he was amazed by the mountains of luggage and equipment piled upon the beach, waiting to be loaded on the lighters, feluccas, and galleys. Rather than drive the long, rough road back downriver, the regiments of both Thebes and Avaris had broken down their chariots and were loading them and the horses onto the lighters. This contributed greatly to the confusion on the riverbank. For once, Taita was not the centre of attraction. There was work to keep everyone fully occupied. Occasionally a man would look up from what he was doing, recognize him and ask for his blessing, or a woman would bring him a sick child to tend. However, he was able to work his way gradually along the beach, casually looking out for the chariots and equipment of Lord Trock's regiment. He recognized them by their green and red pennants, and as he approached, he made out the unmistakable figure of Trock among his men. Taita edged closer and saw him standing over a pile of equipment and weapons, haranguing his lance-bearer. "You brainless baboon! Have you packed my kit? That's my favourite bow lying there unprotected. Some oaf's sure to drive the horses over it." His mood of the previous day had not improved, and he stamped away down the wharf, lashing out with his chariot whip at any unfortunate who stood in his way. Taita watched him pause to talk to another of the sergeants, and then take the path up to the temple. As soon as he disappeared, Taita approached the lance-bearer. The trooper was stripped to breech-clout and sandals, and as he stooped over one of the chests of Trock's equipment and staggered with it down to the waiting lighter, Taita saw the distinctive circular rash of the ringworm on his naked back. The lance-bearer handed up the chest to a boatman on the deck of the galley, then came back. For the first time he noticed Taita standing nearby and touched his own breast with a clenched fist, saluting respectfully. "Come here, soldier," Taita called him across. "How long have you had the itch on your back?" Instinctively the fellow twisted up one arm between his shoulder blades and scratched himself so vigorously that he drew blood. "Oh, cursed thing's been bothering me ever since we captured Abnub. I think it's a gift from one of those dirty Egyptian whores." He broke off, guiltily. Taita knew that he was speaking about a woman he had raped during the capture of the city. "Yeah, forgive me, warlock, we're allies and fellow countrymen now." "That's why I will attend to your affliction, soldier. Go up to the temple, ask at the kitchens for a jar of lard, and bring it to me. I'll mix an ointment for you." Taita sat down on the pile of Trock's luggage and equipment, and the lance-bearer hurried away down the beach. Among the luggage were three war bows. Trock had been unfair in his accusations, for each of the bows was unstrung and carefully wrapped in its leather cover. Taita's seat was a stack of wooden chests. This was not by chance, for he'd seen that the top chest bore the seal of Grippa, the Avaris Fletcher who had made arrows for all the high-ranking Hyksosian officers. Taita remembered that he had discussed Grippa's work with Mintaka. He slipped the little dagger from the sheath under his chiton, cut the cord that secured the lid, and lifted it. A layer of dry straw protected the arrows, and under it they were packed alternately, flint head to gaudy red and green feathers. Taita picked one out and turned it over in his fingers. The carved signet leapt out at him. The stylized head of the leopard, with the hieratic letter T held in its snarling jaws. The arrow was identical to the one he had found in the quiver at the scene of Pharaoh's murder. It was the last thread in the fabric of treason and treachery. Naja and Truk were linked inextricably in the bloody plot, whose whole shape as yet he could only guess at. Taita slipped the incriminating arrow under the folds of his chiton and closed the lid of the chest. Deftly he retied the cord and waited for the lance-bearer to return. The old soldier was volubly grateful for Taita's ministrations, then went on to plead a further favour. A friend of mine has the Egyptian pox, Magus. What should he do about it? It always amused Taita how the Hyksos called it the Egyptian pox, and the Egyptians returned the compliment. It seemed that no man ever contracted it himself, but always had a friend suffering from the disease.